really don't want to do this. But all's fair in love and war, right? Although, this is low, even for us. Damien, I'd like to make sure that no one finds out about any of this. No one will. I'll see to it. He stands. It would render her completely useless to us. He leaves, and I sit staring at everything I need to both win her over and screw her over. I should be elated, but somehow having it in my hand makes me sick, ruining her life like that, for my own gain. Although I really shouldn't feel bad, since she has been trying to ruin mine for years now. I gather up the papers and walk over to my bookshelf and pull out one of the books. The bookcase immediately slides open, revealing a hidden... Wait. You didn't actually buy that, did you? God, you watch too many movies. I put the envelope in a desk drawer and lock it, then pocket the key.
14. A Day in the Life. Tessa. Blog post, March 18th. Tessa here. It's already been a week since I've moved into the palace, and I have to admit, I may have been the slightest bit wrong about the royal family lazing about all day. I've been shadowing Prince Arthur for 7 days now, and he keeps a schedule one could only describe as grueling. I've documented yesterday for you. 6 a.m. workout. 7 a.m. shower and eat breakfast while being briefed on the day's events. 7:45 a.m. meetings. Hour after hour of poring through requests for philanthropy from new charities, planning sessions for various political and charitable events, reading over the day's speeches and making adjustments, signing congratulatory certificates for anyone celebrating special anniversaries, birthdays, or other achievements. Prince Arthur is signing on behalf of his father, who is away at the current time. 11:43 a.m. break to change into suit for luncheon. 12 p.m. greet guests for luncheon honouring the Ladies Auxiliary Association. 12:13 p.m. speech thanking women for their hard work and dedication. 12:17 p.m. attempt to eat lunch while being interrupted repeatedly with requests for signatures/photos. He handled this graciously, I have to say. 1 p.m. wrap up and attempt to leave luncheon while being stopped by those who didn't interrupt his meal. 1:02 p.m. travel to Naval Academy via limo while preparing speech for graduating class. 1:35 p.m. arrive at Naval Base, greet graduates individually, pose for photos. 1:55 p.m. speech. 2:05 p.m. travel back to palace while making congratulatory phone call to Prince Harry on the occasion of his engagement. 2:38 p.m. arrive at palace, go straight to office to prepare for meeting with Zamundan ambassador regarding trade issues with neighbouring nation of Kalubitsi. I was not able to sit in on this, but they both left laughing at 3:05 p.m, so I'm guessing he did his job. 3:10 p.m. after seeing ambassador to his limo, Prince Arthur was given 12 minutes of free time, which he used to check in on his sister, who is preparing for big charity event. 3:22 p.m. prep for tea honouring Avonia's recipients of the Writers Guild Awards. More speech adjustments and time to freshen up. 4 p.m. greeting authors. More photos. Speech. Tea. More photos. 5:30 p.m. back to office to be briefed on local and world news. 6 p.m. back to his apartment to get ready for dinner with Kalabitsian ambassador and his wife to open discussions about trade with Zamunda. 7 p.m. dressed in tuxedo, Prince Arthur greets guests and spends next 2.5 hours socializing and approaching trade issue. 9:35 p.m. sees guests to limo. 9:38 p.m. quick debriefing on tomorrow's events by senior advisor. 10 p.m. day is done. Now, I may have been wrong about how much they do in a day, but I stand by my opinion that what they do accomplish is not at all necessary for the most part for the functioning of this great country. Would the new graduates of the Naval Academy still graduate were it not for the prince showing up to salute them? Yes, they would. Could the Ladies' Auxiliary Association still have a lunch and toast their own success? Yes, they could. Could a member of our government hold meetings with the Kalabitsyan and Zamindan ambassadors to work out a trade deal? You bet they could. So while decidedly not lazy, I still find that the royals are basically unnecessary. Stay tuned, because on Thursday at 10 a.m. will be the live interview with Prince Arthur himself. He'll be facing the 5 most popular questions from you, so please, please, please post some tough questions and vote for them, so we can hold his royal tootsies to the fire. Once I've posted, I take another look at the questions for this Thursday's Ask Me Anything. They have gotten so laughable now that I cannot see how I'll maintain any dignity at all by asking them. I pick up my phone and call Nikki. When she answers, she says, "Did you call the shock jogger people back yet? They sent a registered letter. I had to sign for it." My stomach lurches. "Not yet. It's on my list. But that's not why I called. I called because I need your advice." "You want to shag the prince, but you're not sure if you should." "No, I'm having a crisis of my journalistic integrity." "Not as exciting, but tell me anyway," she says. "It's the Ask Me Anything questions. They're all written by Arthur groupies. What kind of underwear? What's his favourite meal? Is he seeing anyone? They're all crap. Unfortunately, those are the only ones that are being upvoted." "Ah, so your attempt at allowing the people to have an unvetted voice has come back to bite you in the ass." "And hard. I'll look like a giant idiot asking these questions. I won't be taken seriously at all. But if I don't ask their questions, I won't be the voice of the people." I hear a splashing sound. "Are you in the tub again?" "Yes. I had a grief headache. Matthew Crawley just died. But don't worry. I really will replace the wallpaper before you get back," she says. "Okay, here's what I'd say. Are you in this to be taken seriously, or are you in it to make money? Because if it's money, mission accomplished. Your hits must be off the charts amazing in the last week." "Can't I want both?" "You can want both, but you're not necessarily in a position to get both. Not right now, at least. I mean, the shock jogger video is now making the talk show rounds without you. I'd say being taken seriously is a good 6 months off. Maybe a year." "Shit. You're right," I sigh. "Hey, how's your nose?" "Dr. Perfect says it's healing nicely." "How is that going, by the way?" "Orgasmically." "Remind me to buy new sheets when this is all over." "Yeah, you probably should. Maybe a new couch, too." Today, Arthur and I attend the christening of a naval ship, the ANS Viceroy. Who knew royals really did that? Certainly not me. Anyway, since Avonia has only 3 ships, this is a pretty big deal. The Prime Minister is even here to make a speech. Arthur, who is a commander and captain, is dressed in his Royal Navy ceremonial dress uniform. And I have to say, I died a little when I saw him in it. The white hat with the gold trim, the black jacket with gold shoulder boards, the standing collar, the matching black pants and shiniest shoes I think I've ever seen. Add to that his dazzling blue eyes and those dimples that pop when he looks at me. It's all I can do not to actually bite my knuckles. There's not a cloud in the sky as we step out of the limo. I'm happy to feel the sun on my face and breathe in the salt air. To be honest, it's a bit of a relief to be able to step away from Prince Arthur, since the entire ride from the palace was a frustrating exercise in not gawking or appearing at all impressed. He is immediately swept up into a tide of people, and I take a moment to walk down the pier to look at the North Sea. "Miss Sharp." I turn and am face to face with the Prime Minister himself. "Oh, hello, sir." I smile, even though the hairs on the back of my neck rise for some strange reason. "What a great day for our nation." He nods toward the new ship. "Yes, Very impressive. I'm quite a fan of yours. Oh, the shock jogger video? No, no, that looked entirely awful. Nothing funny about that, if you ask me. He shakes his head. I'm a fan of your royal watchdog work. You're very insightful. And I'm not just saying that because you happen to share my opinion on everything you've written about them. Thank you. That's high praise coming from you. I smile politely, but inside alarm bells are going off in my head. Well, I mean it. It's about time someone in Avonia started to question the sanity of a nation choosing their leaders based on being lucky enough to fall out of the right vagina. I mean, if anyone's going to be a ruler until he dies, it should at least be someone we elected in the first place, shouldn't it? What? Did he just say that bit about the right vagina? I've never quite thought of it that way. Just a little joke. I hope I didn't offend you. My wife's always telling me not to make jokes because people often think I'm serious. Oh, no, that's fine. I get it. I nod a nay. Well, thanks for stopping by to chat, but I really should be going sort of way. He doesn't take the hint. I'm guessing it was quite a dilemma to go live with them, knowing you were moving in with the very people you've been attacking for years now. Yes, it was. What made you decide to take the Prince of Laziness up on his offer? He's using my own words, but they feel like acid to my ears when they spill from his mouth. My flat was being fumigated, so I figured I might as well. I laugh at my own joke, and he goes along with it. But other than that, I'm sure you were hoping to get something out of this whole thing. Book deal? A position at one of the big papers, perhaps? One can dream. A gust of wind tugs at the hem of my skirt, and I put my hand down to hold it in place. You're a very brave young woman to go live among the enemy. I'm sure you could use a powerful friend. I've been just fine, sir. Everyone has been very kind to me, actually. Call me Jack. He glances down at my lips, then back to my eyes. Ew. I think we could help each other out, Tessa. You are in a unique position to help the anti-royal movement, and I'm in a unique position to help you in return. What do you mean? Quid pro quo, Clarice. It just so happens that I'm on the hunt for a new speechwriter. Someone with your talents and political savvy would definitely be at the top of my list. His upper lip twitches as he speaks. Or perhaps if that isn't your thing, you'd like to be set up with a nice, cushy job at ABNC. Or back at the Daily Times. There's a lot more security in the mainstream media than you can get as a blogger. That's a most generous offer, sir. My mind is spinning, trying to understand what he really wants. The fact that he brought up the idea of me going back to the newspaper means he's been looking into my past, which is more than a little alarming. I hope you won't mind me asking what I would have to do to earn your friendship. Just keep fighting the good fight as you've been doing. He takes a tissue out of his pocket and blows his nose. And if you happen to find anything of particular interest, you could let me have a look at it first. Ah, here we go. Were I to do that, what exactly would you gain? Giving me an intense gaze, he says, "When launching an attack, a good general knows that timing is every bit as important as aim." Slippery answer. My stomach churns and I feel hot and dizzy all of a sudden. I'm surprised you're planning to launch an attack. They seem to be so solidly on your side during the election. His lips curve up in a smile. You know, Miss Sharp, there was once an ancient Chinese military strategist, Sun Tzu, who said, "Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer." Oh, dear Lord, our Prime Minister is a total schmuck. Wise words indeed, sir. Yes, Sun Tzu was quite the philosopher. You should read his work sometime. The royal family has been leeching off our nation for far too long. It's long past time to put a stop to it, and since their approval ratings are at an all-time low, I'd say our timing couldn't be better. Wouldn't you agree? Before I can respond, a woman in a grey suit taps the Prime Minister on the shoulder. We're just about to start the speeches, sir. He gives me a broad smile and a little nod. It was a pleasure to speak with you, Tessa. I'll be in touch. I watch as he walks away, my legs numb and my heart hammering against my ribs. I have a terrible feeling that he's planning to eat some liver with fava beans. Mine, Arthur's, King Winston's. I don't think he cares, as long as he gets fed. It is late in the evening and I cannot sleep. Instead, my conversation with the Prime Minister rolls around in my head and causes my stomach to churn, even though I have no idea why. We're on the same side, and I've just been offered everything I ever wanted. Serving as a speechwriter to the Prime Minister's office would certainly bring with it a great deal of respect. Or having a second chance as a real journalist at a steady paycheck. Yet I can't help feeling like it would all come at a cost that I'm not willing to pay. I consider telling Arthur about our conversation, but then think better of it. As much as I don't think I can trust Jack Jansen, I can't trust Arthur either. The two of us are playing a dangerous game, and have been literally flirting with disaster this entire time. The smart move would be to stay quiet and say nothing until I better understand the rules.
15. The world keeps spinning. Arthur. It's Friday morning. I had just finished a meeting that Tessa could not attend, and I'm glad she wasn't in there. It was a very long and tedious discussion on the third wave of invitations for the upcoming ball. Having received RSVPs from the second set to go out, we now choose from the third-string guests. It's all entirely self-serving, political, and at times quite petty. We actually spent 20 minutes debating whether or not to invite the Count of Dunningham and his new wife, since his first wife will be attending as her sister's plus one. Her sister is second string. According to Damien, this will put us over the recommended limit of divorced couples in which both parties will be in attendance. Apparently, the maximum number is 1.4% of the total guest list. Any more than that, and you increase your risk of an undesirable scene by 16%. He has some type of algorithm he uses that also takes into account age of new wife and length of time since divorce. In this case, they've only been divorced for a year, and new wife is 32, while first wife is 56, putting them at a category 5 risk of causing a scene. It was for that very reason that I pushed so hard to invite them. I insisted on the basis of length of time, both parties have had a relationship with our family, when in reality, both the former countess and the new one seem rather scrappy, and it would really liven things up if a good catfight broke out. Horrible of me, I know. Damien knew my underlying motives. That vein in his neck was pulsing again. It's because he can't prove it, but he both knows the real reason, and he knows I know that he knows and can't say as much. It's rather delightful, and petty, as I mentioned before, but please, don't hold it against me. I really am starved for entertainment. If Tessa knew this type of thing went on, it would only confirm for her that we have no business leading so much as a Girl Scout troop, let alone an entire kingdom. After checking with Mavis, the maid assigned to Tessa's room, I find Tessa in the solarium, reading a book. She's curled up in one of the puffy armchairs, and something about the sight of her there makes me feel calm, for reasons that I cannot explain. This was my mother's favourite spot, I say, as I sit down on the chair opposite Tessa and take a deep breath of the humid air. Tessa looks up and smiles at me. Or so I'm told. Apparently, she had those chairs and the couch brought in. My father thought she was mad to want to sit among a bunch of dirty plants, but I think she was right. I pat the arms of the chair with both hands. This is the perfect place to hide from the world.
That it is.
Do you know that these plants have come from all over the world? Some as far as the very westernmost part of South America. They've been tended to for generations right here in this building.
I didn't realize that.
She closes her book and looks around for a minute, For once, she looks mildly impressed. I point to a palm that has stretched all the way to the glass ceiling. I had a nanny who used to measure me to that tree right there and tell me if I ate all my greens, I would one day be as tall. Bloody liar. Tessa laughs.
My mum used to tell me that if I ate all my greens, I'd get my breasts quicker.
She turns bright red as soon as she says it, then starts babbling, which I've noticed is what happens when she's embarrassed. It's rather adorable.
Not sure why Mum said that, actually. It's an odd thing to tell a girl. I mean, why would you even want to have breasts early? It just makes you the center of attention for a bunch of prepubescent boys who can't help but stare. Not that I had any breasts at all till I was 16. Flat as a board until then. And tall. Too tall. I had to wear a retainer that made me lisp and spit when I talked. And I had bad acne.
So, very popular then.
Quite,
she says.
Had to beat the boys off with a stick.
Well, better a rose should bloom late than not at all. Her face turns a deeper pink.
So, how was your meeting?
It's over, so that's about the nicest thing I can say about it. I consider bringing the subject back around to her eating greens, but I think better of it. I finally had a chance to read your post from Monday.
I'm sure you have something to say about it.
Wildly inaccurate reporting. I was only given 13 minutes to change before the luncheon, not 17. She gives me a wry smile.
I'll be sure to post a retraction.
I should hope so. I grin over at her. Made me look like a bit of a loafer. Other than that one egregious error, I have to consider it a bit of a victory. You admitted that we're a very hard-working bunch. I emphasize hard-working, in hopes that she'll realize I'm not too different from her dream man.
I also said your work was, by and large, useless.
Sometimes it is. Did that just come out of my mouth? Her eyes light up.
Did you really just admit that?
Admit what?
I said your work was basically useless, and you said sometimes it is.
She laughs. I did not, I said.
Sometimes are his. What? That doesn't even make sense.
Tessa bursts out laughing, and I feel unusually happy. Biz, sometimes a biz, she hoots, almost falling out of a chair, and I laugh along at myself. And suddenly the world seems like a very nice, simple place to live. I know it can be nice at times, but it is not in any way simple. Not for me. Because here I am, having the most fun I've had with anyone in a very long time, and it happens to be with a woman who's made her living bashing my family. When the moment passes, I remind myself of the job at hand. Do you ever have moments when the world seems to be spinning so fast that it feels as though it's going to pop right off its axis and go hurtling through space?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Her eyes light up, and I feel a pang of guilt for using the information from a dating profile. I don't. I try to brush off the nagging guilt while she laughs. When she stops, I give her a serious look. Most days, I just wish I could find a way to slow it all down, so I can take a breath and think before my life passes by, without me having really enjoyed it. Oh, I'm pushing it now, aren't I? In for a penny, in for a pound. Tessa nods.
I can see why. You keep up a nearly impossible pace.
It has to be possible. I've been doing it for years. She tilts her head and stares for a moment.
Just because something's been done one way for hundreds of years doesn't mean it should continue.
Ah, we're back to progress versus tradition again, aren't we?
It would seem to me that you're unhappy about a number of things with this life. Maybe a change would be a good thing for you too. Imagine a life where you set your own course. You decide what you're going to do all week.
Her eyes are wild with excitement. And I have to say, it's a tiny bit contagious. I know I came in here for a reason, but at the moment, I've completely forgotten what it was. There are days when there is nothing I'd like more.
So maybe, she says, pointing one finger in the air, just maybe, what would be good for the country would also be good for you.
What you consider good for the country, you mean? This may come as a shock, but I'm for progress too.
Just not the type I'm talking about.
I nod. I don't believe that everything new is in fact progress. Sometimes we change simply for the sake of change, and it takes us back a few paces in our humanity. If we lost our throne, what would become of all those who depend on our help?
You'd still be in a position to help them,
I suppose. As I stare at Tessa, Arabella's words about opening up come back to me. It might be worth a shot. Who knows? Maybe I'll surprise myself and find there is more to me than I think. The thing is, I don't know what I'd do with my life if I'm not doing this. And I know that's not a reason to keep me or my family around, but if you could put yourself in my shoes for just a moment, I'm sure you could see why I would want to stop this from happening. She gives me a sad smile.
I hate to tell you this, but everyone who's about to lose their job feels this way. It's never easy on anyone.
Why should I be any different, right? I do my best to keep my tone light.
Exactly.
Because I am different. I hold up my hand before she can protest. Not because I was born to privilege, or I'm more important than anyone else, but because the very purpose of my existence is to become the king. When your parents decided to have children, it was so that they could have a family to love. When you were born, they didn't say,
"We will spend every day preparing Tessa, so that when the time comes, she will be the best blogger this nation has ever seen." They said, "Here is our perfect baby girl.
I wonder what she'll grow up to become. We'll give her every opportunity so that she can live out her dreams, whatever they may be." Your parents got married because they fell in love. My parents got married so that my father could produce heirs. My very life itself is solely for the purpose of providing Avonia with the next in a long line of kings, to do my service for our country, and one day rule in the name of my family. So, all that to say, I am different.
I can't even imagine what that must be like, but it sounds very sad to me.
Her face softens, and empathy pours from her and washes over me. Nope, this sharing thing is too much. If I keep this up, I'll be a blubbering idiot within minutes. I shrug. It's not all bad. There are perks.
Don't do that. Don't make light of what must be so difficult.
Your voice is so gentle, it's painful. I have no business feeling sorry for myself when I sleep in a palace at night and there are millions of people in the world without so much as clean water to drink.
I don't know. I'd say you do have cause to complain. Not very loud, mind you, or to the wrong people, but it's okay to admit when you've been hurt.
Forget it. I'm done. This is too hard. I should go get ready. I have to leave for a board meeting for the Children's Hospital Fundraising Association in a few minutes. I stand. I actually wanted to see if you'd like to come along.
I don't think I could be ready in time.
All right. I turn, but a voice stops me.
Arthur, when I lost my job, it was awful. I was a wreck, actually. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I had to pick up the pieces and get on with things fast. If it happens to you, you'll at least have time to figure it all out.
I'll have my home and money, right? I swallow hard. I know that, I do. But the thing is that my life will have no purpose, Tessa. None at all. Lifting a chin, Tessa says,
I disagree. I think you're getting one's life purpose and one's occupation confused.
In my case, they are one in the same.
We aren't defined by our occupation, we're defined by our character.
Certainly, but character doesn't give one a purpose.
Neither does occupation.
She sighs and shakes her head.
I'm worried that you're pinning all your hopes on me, Arthur, but even if I did try to convince the nation that they should vote with you, should it come to that, I'm just one person. I can't stop the world from spinning.
I suppose not. I stare at her for a moment, then decide to risk something I never thought I would. My pride. Tessa, I need to ask you something. And as much as I hate to do it, it has to be you. You see, while you're one of the very few people willing to be brutally honest with me, you are, in actual fact, the only one who knows the first thing about life outside this palace. So even though you've led the charge to take my family down, I'm standing here with my hat in my hand, asking for your help. If you were me, how would you turn this ship around? She blinks in surprise.
You want my opinion?
I do. As strange as it sounds, yours is the only opinion that matters right now. Tessa watches me for a moment before she speaks, and I can tell she's struggling with whether or not to help me. Finally, she says,
"Okay, here's what I would say is your family's biggest failing. You've done a very poor job of letting the people know who you are. We have a vague idea of what you do for Avonia and the realms. But there is a human component that's missing. The public has been given the impression that none of you believe you are accountable to us, which, frankly, does far more damage than good. If it were me, I'd try to open up and share more of who you are. Not just giving yourselves pats on the back for charity done, but let people in on the little moments that make you human. At the end of the day, that's what earns trust and adoration."
That's a very hard thing for someone like me to want to do. People can't hurt you with what they don't know.
Sure they can. When there's a gaping hole in our collective knowledge, it's human nature to try to fill it.
I sigh. And they don't always fill it with nice things.
Exactly.
Thank you, Tessa. I'm truly grateful that you would share your wisdom with me. The door opens to the solarium, and Vincent says,
"Found him!"
into his walkie-talkie. I take a deep breath and follow him out. As the door closes behind me, I realize that I've just been given the last advice I want to take. To do more of this open-up-and-bleed business.
16. A Cautionary Tale from the Camera Operators Union. Tessa. I'm standing in what is known as the Gold Drawing Room, and I can tell you the room lives up to its name. The couches are white with gold trim. The tables, gold. The curtains, guess what? Also gold. The sun pours in through the window as I set up my camera on a tripod to take the first in a series of crap interviews designed by idiots and conducted by me. Quite possibly an even bigger idiot, since it was my idea in the first place. I practice reading the questions aloud while not glaring. Then I check my watch. Arthur is set to be here in 5 minutes, and the live feed on Facebook will start in exactly 7 minutes. The fact that the interview will be live gives true transparency, since the viewers will know we didn't edit anything out. Although it also means that if I fuck anything up, it's live and will be out in the world forever. I'm cold sweat nervous. I shake my hands and breathe deeply. No big deal. I'm only about to have my first exclusive interview of my career with a major internationally known celebrity, and I'm going to ask him if he wears boxers or briefs. I take a deep breath and hear the sound of the door. Knock, knock. Prince Arthur strides in, dressed in a light grey suit. He's wearing a blue tie that brings out those amazing eyes of his. I'm dumbstruck for a moment before I force my tongue into action. Good morning. Are you all ready for the big interview? Looking forward to it, he grins. I have to confess, I peeked at the Reddit forum to get an idea of the caliber of questions I'd be facing. Hard-hitting stuff, I know. I roll my eyes. Apparently, I have a few fans out there still. Apparently, I say. I know the questions aren't exactly cerebral, but I suppose it'll give you a chance to show the people your fun side. It seems they're more interested in seeing my backside. He points to the chair positioned across from the camera. Right here. I nod. This shouldn't take more than a few minutes. I have 23 minutes slotted for this, so we should be fine. He sits down and checks his tie, then gives his jacket a sharp tug. Unlike me, this is not his first interview. He picks up the mic that is on the table next to the chair and fastens it to his tie, which is kind of a shame because I was sort of definitely hoping to do that for him. God, Tessa, you're pathetic. It's a live feed, so I'm going to sit next to you and control the camera via remote. Excellent. The smile on his face is nothing short of devious. I stand behind the camera, focusing in on his face. His gorgeous, impossibly handsome, could turn a girl to a puddle just by looking at her face. Huh. This whole camera thing could work for me. I can stare freely without seeming creepy. Yes, Tessa the pathetic stalker has a plan. Okay, are you ready, Your Highness? I sit down, mic up, smooth out my skirt and take one last deep breath. Yes. He nods, then says quietly, Don't worry. You won't fuck up. Camera is rolling now. My cheeks heat up at his encouragement, and now I'm all tingling and warm right when I need to be cool as a cucumber. Good morning, Prince Arthur. I'd like to thank you for agreeing to this series of Ask Me Anything interviews. Thank you for setting this up, Ms. Sharp. It's a rare opportunity to face questions directly from the public like this, so I'm looking forward to what I'm sure will be a worthy challenge. I'd like to make one request, however. Everything you ask me, I'd like you to answer as well. I freeze up and turn to him with my mouth hanging open like an idiot. Live feed. Great idea. I manage to close my mouth quickly and purse my lips together for a moment. I'm sure your public will much rather spend the time learning about you, Your Highness. I beg to differ. You're quite a celebrity in your own right. He grins at me, then the camera. I plaster a fake smile on my face, even though I'm ready to wring his royal neck. I stare at the lens, my heart now so far lodged into my throat that I am unable to speak. Arthur can, however. Come on, Miss Sharp. Show the people your fun side. Okay, then. We'll start with the fifth most upvoted question and make our way to number one. I glance down at the paper in my shaking hand. Question five received 3,212 votes. Has Prince Arthur ever considered that he might find love with a common girl, like, say, a girl named Denise, who works at the One Stop over on Broadmoor Street? Arthur smiles into the camera. Seems like people are really rooting for Denise at the One Stop. Denise, I'm sure if we ever met, you'd be an absolute heartbreaker. As to the question of finding love with what you call a common girl, I find that hard to imagine, since almost every woman I've met is nothing short of a goddess. Oh, I am not even going to hide my disgust right now. I'm just going to wear it for everyone to see. Thank you, I say through gritted teeth. That was nothing short of patronizing. I turn to the camera. So, Denise, if you're out there watching this, he's all yours, love. Arthur cocks his head toward me with a smirk. So, Miss Sharp, have you ever considered that you might find love with a common boy or girl, for that matter? I glare at him. Some day I hope to find a nice fellow, yes. Preferably someone who lacks arrogance and cares about important issues, like the environment and human rights. Did you mean to suggest anyone but me? Because I assure you I do care about important issues, both globally and locally. I sit on the board of 36 charities, actually, and my family supports over 2,000 more each year, providing millions in fundraising dollars each year. Without our work, many of them would have to shut down. I'm sure that's true, but you'd still not make a good candidate as far as I'm concerned. Oh, the arrogance thing. He looks directly into the camera. She's a real nutbuster, this one. Son of a bitch. He certainly knows how to make the most of this opportunity. Glancing down at my paper, I see the only hard-hitting question on the list is next. And it's not even cleverly worked. Question four has 400,098 votes. Why don't you all just get jobs and stop sponging off all of us poor people? The prince nods once, a conciliatory gesture. I can see how some may view my family as leeches on society. I believe those were your words. But I would like to point out that my family provides very good jobs for over 1,200 people each year. They have full benefits, nicely padded pensions, and enjoy job security that is hard to come by these days. In addition to this and our charity work, I believe we have an important place in protecting the people through our veto power in Parliament. It's not often that the monarchy exercises it, but on the occasion that we have, we've found the people were glad to have us act on their behalf. There was that whole matter of the bill to remove a woman's right to file for divorce back in 1974. My grandfather stopped that in its tracks. Yes, but that was over 40 years ago. What have you done since then? While it's true that we haven't had to step in for a long time, I believe that the knowledge that we are here to do so keeps our government leaders in check in some ways. Damn, he's smooth. He doesn't even look a bit ruffled. That was the best thing I had. He smiles into the camera. I suppose I can't ask you the same question, really, since you're self-employed. Correct. It would make even less sense than the last one. My turn for a smug smile. Question 3 has just over 500,300 votes. What workout does the prince do to stay in such incredible shape? He grins over at me. I know my cheeks are pink because they certainly are hot right now. Thank you to the author of that question. Very flattering. 6 mornings a week I train with my head bodyguard, Ollie. He's a former commando and we do some boot camp style stuff, as well as mixed martial arts. He also makes me run a lot. I could use something to help improve my pace, though. I'm looking to increase it by, about 20% or so over my next 12 runs. You wouldn't happen to know of a product that would help with that, would you, Miss Sharp? I laugh, hoping it sounds even a little bit sincere. You're referring to the shock jogger, of course. Hilarious, Your Highness. I smile over at him. You're welcome to borrow mine any time. I'll even help you set the pace. You're ever too generous. Now, your turn. What workout do you do to keep yourself in such incredible shape? Running. Preferably not with a cattle prod tied around my ribs. I also do yoga. Yoga? He lifts his eyebrows. Keeps a person bendy, I hear. Yes, you should try it. I can feel a cold sweat under my arms. Okay, we're burning through these questions now. Number 2 is a two-parter and has 5,500 votes. How did you decide to get a pig when most royal families have dogs? Also, how is Dexter and can we see some videos of him with the prince? It's a funny story, actually. A few years ago, I was dating a certain supermodel who fell in love with Paris Hilton's teacup pig. Unfortunately, the term teacup is wildly inaccurate when it comes to pigs. Unless you're referring to the cups in that ride at Disneyland. She lost interest in both of us as soon as he couldn't fit in her purse. But it all worked out in the end. He's quite happy living here, and he makes a very good companion. Do we have time for me to bring him in here? Sure. Why the hell not? It's not like I have any dignity left at this point, anyway. Might as well bring in the barnyard animals. He reaches into his pocket and pulls out his phone. I'll just ask his handler to bring him in. Oh, but wait a minute. Upper hand, here I come. You pay a handler to look after your pig? That seems like a very poor use of taxpayer money. Yes, it would be if the money came from the taxpayers. The door opens and Dexter squeals, running directly to Arthur. Arthur reaches down with both hands and scratches behind his pink ears. Troy, we're doing an interview right now. Would you like to come on and say something to the people out there? I think they'd be interested to know about the work you do. I watch Troy walk across the room and my stomach drops. The first time I met him in the library, I was so distracted that I didn't actually look at him. He very clearly has some form of intellectual disability. Troy walks over and stands beside Arthur, peering into the camera and waving. Hello out there! I smile at Troy. Troy, can you share with the people what you do here? He looks at me like I'm half-baked. Right now, I'm talking into the camera. That's what Prince Arthur asked me to do. Arthur reaches up his hand and rests it on Troy's arm. She didn't mean right now. She's talking about your job here with Dex. Oh, you should have said that then, Troy says to me. I take care of Dexter while the prince is busy working all day. Otherwise, he'll get bored and get into a lot of trouble. He's a rascal when he's bored or hungry. He once chewed up a set of candlesticks, the bottoms off a set of very old curtains, and the leg off a nice couch all in one afternoon. But that was before I started here. Now he's a happy pig. We go for long walks every day, and we watch some TV together. He loves the Nature Channel, but sometimes he'll sit through a bit of a football match if I'm lucky. Sounds like a terrific job. It is, except when I have to give Dexter a bath. He doesn't like that very much, I'll tell you. Troy laughs as he says it, and I find myself laughing with him. Troy takes a big breath and looks down at me. I know you don't like the royal family, but I want to say they're nice people. The prince here is real good to work for. My old boss at the warehouse used to yell at me when I'd make a mistake. And I make a lot of them. But Prince Arthur is always kind, even if I do something wrong. I feel a lump in my throat and tears pricking my eyes at the thought of someone yelling at this man. Pull it together, softy. I clear my throat. Thank you, Troy. Arthur winks at him. Thanks, mate. We should finish the interview now. Yes, you should. Mr. Vincent is standing just outside the door there, pointing at his watch. Do you see him? Arthur tries not to laugh. I did not. Thank you for letting me know. No problem, sir, he says as he walks away. Wouldn't want you to get in trouble. That's no fun. Come on, Dexter, buddy! Dexter trots after Troy, and I have once again been proven wrong. Pucker. But nice, too, I suppose. Your turn. Do you have any pets, Ms. Sharp? A better fish, Chester. Is it better fish that fight to the death if you put two together? Yes. Where is he going with this? A rather competitive choice in a pet, don't you think? Chester does not work or play well with others. He grins at me. Some say we choose a pet that is most like our own personalities. And you have a pig who is very naughty when he's bored or hungry. What does that say about you? Arthur laughs. Touché, madam. This brings us to our last question. I close my eyes for a brief second. With over 6,000 upvotes, which type of underwear does His Highness Prince Arthur wear? Clean ones. You? Also clean. Am I dripping with sweat? I feel like I'm dripping. Arthur wags a finger at me. No copying off your deskmate now, Ms. Sharp. Smug bastard. You'll have to give another answer. Girly ones. He raises one eyebrow. Oh, my favourite kind. To wear? I purse my lips. Ha! I walked into that, didn't I? He's speaking directly into the camera now. I only like to see the girly ones, not wear them. Okay, well, that's it for our first live interview. I'm using that voice my mum used when the twins started asking about how babies are made. Now that we've gotten the silly questions over with, perhaps people can put forth some more serious political questions. Please, let's not waste this opportunity to have access to the royal family by only finding out about pets and underwear. I turned to Arthur. Thank you, Your Highness, for being quite a sport today. It was my pleasure. I rather like the fun questions. As far as I'm concerned, keep them coming. Oh, and I have finally gotten into the 21st century. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as The Real Prince Arthur, so check it out, because I'll be sharing all kinds of fun pictures and secrets from now on. Twitter? Instagram? I sit, unable to move for a second, but then I finally remember to press the remote button to shut off the camera. I slump down in my chair, letting out a big sigh. Well, that was humiliating on so many levels. Why, I thought you came off as quite clever. You're quick on your feet, you know. You could do television if you had the mind to. He takes off his mic. You're certainly pretty enough. Very smooth voice. Thanks. I blush and my heart patters. I'm sorry about implying that Troy's wage was paid by taxes. Arthur shrugs. No problem. It would be natural for you to assume as much. I'm on the board of a group that finds work for people whom some would consider unemployable. Everyone deserves the dignity provided by a good job, don't you think? Yes, of course. Even people like me, he asks. That's different. Troy is earning his wage. And I'm not. Not the wage you're getting. He folds his arms. And exactly how much am I getting? Well, since your family has been so tight-lipped about that, I can only guess. Probably a few hundred thousand a year. Interesting guess. I don't get paid, actually. Instead of a wage, I am allowed to live here, and I receive a clothing allowance. The majority of my expenses are covered by a blend of our family's investments and real estate holdings. Only 20% of our annual income comes from tax dollars, which goes directly to pay for staff who work to promote tourism. This amounts to just over $1 million per year, but over the past 20 years, our family has generated over $70 million in tourism dollars. A more than beneficial investment for the people, don't you think? Why isn't this made public? Ahem. Vincent stands at the door. You are overdue to meet with the ambassador to Belgium, Your Highness. Arthur gives me a quick bow. Thank you, Tessa. That was a hoot. He winks and walks out the door. I stare shamelessly at his ass and lick my lips while he walks away. When the door closes behind him, I check my armpits and see that, yes, they are indeed drenched through. Then I reach down my blouse and adjust my bra so that the underwire is no longer digging into my left boob. Ah, much better. I notice my cell phone blinking on the table across the room. I get up and swipe the screen. Text from Nikki. Feed is still live. Shut off camera. Seriously? 17. Just two people talking. Tessa. Sunday morning again, and I'm exactly where I was last week at this time. In recovery mode, even though I haven't had a Saturday night bender. I've just made the mistake of reading the latest comments on my first Ask Me Anything interview. Unfortunately, my armpit sniffing and mining for boobs act has captured more attention than the interview itself, which has proved counterproductive for my whole Take Tessa Seriously campaign. I have about 30 offers from creepy men willing to help me adjust my breasts, a little move which has made Arthur stifle a laugh every time he's seen me since Thursday. He also stops me before we head into any meetings or ribbon-cutting ceremonies and asks, "Do you need to do a last-minute knocker check? Now's your chance." Grr. Princes, am I right? A tap at the door interrupts my work. Assuming it's Mavis to collect my breakfast tray, I call to her to come in. Only it's not Mavis. It's Arthur. And I'm still in bed with my bedhead and morning breath, which I'm pretty sure he can smell from over there. I yanked the duvet up to my neck. Oh, I thought you were Mavis. Nope, just me. He's dressed in jeans and a white T-shirt. And, oh my lord, does he wear this look well? I was wondering if you'd like to go for a walk. A walk? With his royal sexiness? Sounds dangerous. I thought you were at church. I rarely make it to church. I usually have important business to attend to. Well, that's my excuse anyway. He grins. I like to sleep in sometimes. So, kind of like a regular person. I smile. Kind of, only on a much higher thread count. His dimples pop as he smiles at his own joke. So, are you coming out or not, Sharp? Give me about 20 minutes to eat and get dressed. Sure. As soon as he leaves, I hop out of bed and glance in the mirror. I definitely require more than 20 minutes worth of grooming to look halfway decent, but since he already saw me like this, anything will be an improvement. By the time Arthur knocks on my door, I'm dressed in a light-knit pale pink sweater with a white infinity scarf and skinny jeans that are tucked into tall brown suede boots. My hair is back in a low ponytail and topped with a brown cap to hide the fact that it needs some attention. I swipe my lips with some gloss as I hurry to the door. This is not a date. This is not a date. When I open the door, he's leaning against the door jamb, which means that we're so close I can smell his aftershave. Let me tell you, that is some manly, sexy aftershave. I don't know which brand it is, but it should be called Spontaneous Orgasm. All ready? I nod, because my mouth doesn't seem to work when he's standing this close to me. Let's go. We make our way out the back of the castle, then down a long gravel path that leads around the perimeter of the grounds. The sun shines, warming the skin on my face, and I feel more relaxed than I have since I got here. Arthur seems somehow calmer as well. I hope you don't mind if I pay you a compliment, he says. Depends on what it is. Setting boundaries again? He raises one eyebrow and gives me a half-smile. Maintaining them, I laugh. Boundaries are very important. As is getting the upper hand. That too. I'll risk it then and hope that I don't cross your boundary or risk losing the upper hand. Ha! You're mistaken. I took the upper hand in the limo on the first day, and I don't intend to give it back. Well, you're entitled to be wrong. He bumps my shoulder with his, and I do it right back. Then he stops and turns to me, and I do the same. His eyes search mine for a moment, and his expression is so intense that I'm reminded of why I was avoiding being alone with him. I wanted to say that over the past 2 weeks, I've been very impressed with how you've conducted yourself. You've been living among a rather odd group of strangers, whilst under a lot of scrutiny, and you've really managed it all with an unusual amount of grace. Oh, well, thank you. I stammer on the words, trying to quash the swell of pride in my chest at his words. An unusual amount of grace. No one has ever described me that way in my entire life.
What about the on-air boob adjustment?
Especially that. He keeps walking, and I'm glad to not be face to face with him anymore, because if we stayed like that too long, I'm pretty sure that my expression would give me away. You're not what I was expecting, Tessa Sharp. Uh-oh. Here it comes. I assumed you'd be an absolute harpy, but you've turned out to be rather lovely, in every sense of the word. Rather lovely? Nikki's going to die when she hears that one. I look up at him with an impish expression. You're just trying to butter me up. Of course I am. Doesn't mean it isn't the truth, though. he says. Did I cross your line just then? I'll allow it. I put on my best regal voice. Laughing, Arthur gives a little bow. Oh, thank you.